Okay, so I came across this story a while back, and I wanted to talk about it. It's pretty recent, past 2.5 weeks or so. Now, this article is called The Great Feminization by a Woman, Helen Andrews. So it's been a couple of weeks. I don't remember exactly the gist of it, but if I recall, it was pretty good, which is why I wanted to talk about it. So let's just jump right into it. And yeah, we are experiencing a great feminization because, you know, everything's a social construct. So somehow being feminine is the superior choice. So we're going to ideologically polarize everybody in that direction, at least men. Women, we're going to make more masculine, right? So everybody's as out of touch with their own natures as humanly possible. Yeah. My. All right. So in 2019, I, meaning Helen Andrews, I guess, read an article about Larry Summers. I don't know who that is, but anyway. And Harvard that changed the way I look at the world. Okay. I'm with you so far. The author, writing under the pseudonym Jay Stone, argued that the day Larry Summers resigned as president of Harvard University marked a turning point in our culture. The entire woke era could be extrapolated from that moment, from the details of how Summers was canceled, and most of all, who did the canceling? Women. Okay. So Larry Summers was president of Harvard and he quit, or was forced to quit, resign, because of a woman? Interesting. Okay. He must have said something that women didn't like. All right. It's interesting, isn't it? Women always are the ones canceling people. The basic facts of the Summers case were familiar to me. On January 14th, 2005, at a conference on diversifying the science and engineering workforce. Diversifying science and engineering? I think we know what that means. More women, more blacks, more Latinos, less white people. Yeah. Larry Summers gave a talk in 2005, and he was canceled 14 years later. No surprise there. He gave a talk that was supposed to be off the record. Women have no honor, of course. So off the record doesn't mean off the record. Their word means nothing. You got to remember that, guys. Women don't have a sense of honor. So if they say something, you can't hold them to task for it. They don't know what word means. You gave your word? Oh, I don't know what giving my word means. My feelings. In it, he said that female underrepresentation in hard sciences was partly due to different availability of aptitude at the high end, meaning that these fields, generally speaking, will be chosen and filled by the people with the highest IQs and aptitudes. For STEM, which is going to be men, because men tend to cluster at the, the ends of the spectrum. And when you're talking about the smartest people, it's all men. And the smartest people are going to fill jobs in STEM. And that's going to be men, mostly. So it's no surprise that men would be overrepresented. Because, yeah, at the high ends of the IQ scale, it's mostly men. No! That's biological realism! There's no such thing! Everything's a social construct, including biology! Okay, ladies, whatever. Anyway, as well as differences between men and women. Taste differences, yeah. Yeah. Women don't want to work 80-hour weeks. They're not good with stress. But anyway, not attributable to socialization. So, lefties, libtards, they don't believe in biological determinism for the most part. Essentially, they think everything's a social construct. They're blank slate theorists. They believe that men and women are exactly the same, and any differences that manifest are not because of biology, but because of social factors, socialization, yeah. Some female professors in attendance were offended by reality. Yeah. And sent his remarks to a reporter. Okay. Jesus Christ. In defiance of the off-the-record rule, the ensuing scandal led to a no-confidence vote by Harvard faculty and eventually Summers' resignation. Wait. It led to his resignation 14 years later? Oh, wait, you read an article in 2019 about Summers. Okay, so that doesn't mean he resigned in 2019. I see. Okay. Anyway, the essay the guy wrote argued that it wasn't just that women had canceled the president of Harvard. Okay. It was that they'd canceled him in a very feminine way. What does that mean? Women don't have men's strength, so they don't tend to settle their differences with violence or the threat of violence or in any aggressive manner. Instead, they do character assassination. They use words. They use manipulation, emotion, shame, because they don't have the physical strength to enforce change via physical means. Yeah. Anyway, they made emotional appeals rather than logical arguments, of course. Of course, that's another area that men are different and better at than women. Of course, women would tell you, oh, no, it's just socialization. That's why we are more emotional. It has nothing to do with biology. When he started talking about innate differences in aptitude between men and women, which social constructivists don't believe in, I just couldn't breathe because this kind of bias makes me physically ill. What do you mean bias? You mean a bias for truth? A bias for reality? A bias for seeing how the world works? Said Nancy Hopkins, a biologist at MIT. Oh my God, she's a biologist and she doesn't know how biology works. Wow. Wow-wow-wee. Okay, lady. That's scary. That's frightening. Yikes. Definitely a DEI hire there. Summers made a public statement clarifying his remarks, and then another, and then a third, with the apology more insistent each time. Dude, never apologize to the left. Never. It just makes things worse, all right? Makes them more rabid. Makes them salivate more. It's like chum in the water for sharks. Experts chimed in to declare that everything Summers had said about sex differences was within the scientific mainstream. 20 years ago, maybe. Now the scientific mainstream is inundated with women who believe in social justice and using their job to promote, activism that promotes DEI. These rational appeals had no effect on the mob hysteria. Of course not. I mean, that's how women affect change, right? They lack the physical strength. They don't have the aggression of men. No, even if they did, they wouldn't have the physical strength to back it up. So they come together in large collective groups and they grievance monger. They nag until you acquiesce, right? Because inherently men want to please and protect women and make them comfortable and make them happy. And so, women play to that. This cancellation was feminine, the essay argued, because all cancellations are feminine. Yeah, pretty much. That's how they affect change, right? Cancel culture is simply what women do whenever there are enough of them in a given organization or field. Pretty much. Yep. It's true. That's why people got upset. That's why the women got upset. Because the guy was pointing out truths. They don't like truths. Well, not if those truths, might affect their standing in their job, right? Might affect more of them getting hired in that field. That is the great feminization thesis. Oh, my God. STEM. People hiring in STEM. If more and more of them acknowledge this reality, they may not hire as many women based on quotas. They might hire people based on, merit. Yeah, God forbid. That's the great feminization thesis, which the same author later elaborated upon at book length. Everything you think of as wokeness is simply an epiphenomenon of demographic feminization. Yep, we call it gynocentrism. the manosphere. The explanatory power of this simple thesis was incredible. Of course. Yeah. Well, I don't know about incredible. We in the manosphere have known this stuff for quite a long time. It really did unlock the secrets of the era we are living in. For you. It's interesting. I was talking about this stuff 10 years ago, man. It's only now that it's becoming okay to address it. Because, of course, the narrative has been controlled. Gatekeepers are in place. Controlled op shills are doing their job of control op shilling and gatekeeping. and the waters have been muddied, the well has been poisoned. So sure, now you can talk about it. Yeah. It really did unlock the secrets of the era we're living in. Wokeness is not a new ideology. Of course not. It's an outgrowth of Marxism or a result of post-Obama disillusionment. Obama, big giant commie. Isn't he now shilling for that Mondami, or whatever that guy? The guy that wants to be New York's new mayor, and probably will be. It is simply feminine patterns of behavior applied to institutions where women were few in number until recently. How did I not see it before? Well, many people have argued that communism itself, which was an outgrowth of the French Revolution, was largely influenced, brought about by women. But anyway, I'm not going to get into that now. How did you not see it before? I don't know. How did you not see it before? Well, you were being gaslit left and right by postmodernists and Marxists, essentially effinists who had infiltrated the field. And, of course, it wasn't allowed to be talked about, and nobody was addressing these things. Possibly because, like most people, I think of feminization as something that happened in the past before I was born. Oh, no. It's still happening even now. When we think about women in the legal profession, for example, we think of the first women to attend law school, 1869. Oh, jeez. We think of the first woman to the first woman to argue a case before the Supreme Court, 1880, and the first female Supreme Court justice. Yeah, don't get me started on that. Was that Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Yeah, piece of garbage that she was. Total, complete, wokey, woke moron. Yeah. Don't rest in peace, you old hag. Hope you're in hell right now getting poked by the devil himself with his trident. A much more important tipping point is when law schools became majority female. Yikes, is that true? I mean, I know that university's majority female, but I didn't know law schools were. Oh, my God. That explains a few things, which occurred in 2016, or when law firm associates became majority female. Oh, my God. Well, no wonder the replacement rate is so far down. No wonder nobody's having kids. Lawyers work like 80 hours a week, man. Your woman becomes a lawyer. You ain't having no kids, which occurred in 2023. When Sandra Day O'Connor was appointed to the high court, only 5% of judges were female. Today, women are 33% of judges in America. Oh, my God. No wonder men are getting shafted. I mean, a lot of these judges that are male are also effinists, big giant simps, who've been indoctrinated. So you tally them with the female judges, and dudes don't have a chance. Yeah. And 63% of judges appointed by Joe Biden. That's not very egalitarian. Why did he appoint more female judges than male judges? Because women are easier to control via subsidies. Via handouts, and they're more collectivist in nature. Yeah. So they're easier to propagandize. Yeah. And again, control. The same trajectory can be seen in many professions. Mm-hmm. In the 1960s and 70s, increasing female representation through the 80s and 90s, and gender parity finally arriving, at least in the younger cohorts in the 2010s and 20s. In 1974, only 10% of New York Times reporters were female. The New York Times staff became majority female in 2018, and today the female share is 55%. Notice that all of these jobs that are becoming majority female are desk jobs, easy jobs, essentially. They do require a lot of education, but remember that women, they've got affirmative action, they got quotas, companies are three times as likely to hire a woman as a man. To virtue signal, you know, to fill quotas, to look progressive. And so, yeah. Women are filling up these easy jobs, right? You're not seeing them in drywall or bricklaying, right? Of course not. Yeah. Anyway, medical schools became majority female in 2019. Really? Oh, my God. Yikes. This is scary. Women became a majority of the college-educated workforce in 2019. Women became a majority of college instructors in 2023. Oh, my God. Academia is all women. It's majority women. Wait, ladies, what happened to egalitarianism? I thought you wanted equal representation. Now, no. Well, now we need affirmative action and quotas for men. Oh, no. Can't have that. Men aren't easy enough to control. They're too individualistic. We need women in there. They're much easier to control. They're collectivist in nature. Oh, my God. Okay, women are not yet the majority of managers in America, but they might soon be, as they are now 46%. Oh, my God. So the timing fits. Wokeness arose around the same time that many important institutions tipped demographically from majority male to majority female. Yep. I've been saying for years that the powers that be control men through women because they can't directly control men because it's like trying to herd cats, but women want to be herded. They follow the herd. The substance fits too. Everything you think of as wokeness involves prioritizing the feminine over the masculine. Yes. Well, you know, these social constructivists say that the feminine and the masculine are just in and of themselves constructs. They don't have any grounding in biological determinism. It's just some kind of choice that men made years ago. Men did the choosing, and they because they oppressed women, and they were the rulers. They were in charge, and so men chose all of the best attributes and all that and all the best social roles and roles, period, for themselves. I don't know how you explore men then going to war and be the ones that die the majority of the time in war, fight most of the wars, die mostly on the job. How many women are dying on the job? 1 or 2%, same with war. So I don't know, you know, how your argument explains that, your whole social constructivist BS. If men were choosing all the best social roles and all of the best attributes, if everything's just a social construct, then why did they also choose the least advantageous roles as well? Wouldn't they have sent women to war? I don't know. This is all nonsense. But anyway. Yeah. So what they've done is now the women are becoming more masculine and the men are becoming more feminine, right? So empathy over rationality, safety over risk, cohesion over competition. Other writers who have proposed their own versions of the great feminization thesis, such as Noah Carle or Bo Weingard and Corey Clark, who looked at feminization's effects on academia, offer survey data showing sex differences in political values. One survey, for example, found that 71% of men said protecting free speech was more important than preserving a cohesive society. Well, you want to preserve a cohesive society, you got to have the ability to speak your mind and an open marketplace of ideas. Meanwhile, women, only 59% of women said the opposite. Holy moly. That protecting the cohesion of society, the collective, was more important than free speech, right? So the ends justify the means, you know. If we need to trammel people's rights and freedoms to enforce social cohesion, then that's okay. Yeah. I told you, women are natural Marxists and commies, okay? That's why they need to be balanced out by men's logic, reason, and individualism. Unfortunately, men have become ever more feminized and prioritize feminine ideals and modes of behavior and women themselves over logic and reason. Anyway, the most relevant differences are not about individuals, but about groups. In my experience, individuals are unique, and you come across outliers who defy stereotypes every day, but groups of men and women display consistent differences, correct? Which makes sense if you think about it statistically. A random woman might be taller than a random man, but a group of 10 random women is very unlikely to have an average height greater than that of a group of 10 men. Correct. The larger the group of people, the more likely it is to conform to statistical averages. Well, you see, the powers that be don't like statistical averages. They can't control people by focusing on statistical averages and statistical group differences. No. Female group dynamics favor consensus and cooperation. Right. Collectivism. Mm-hmm. Sure, of course. Because women, for the vast majority of human history, for millions of years, were back in the trees, back in the cave, back in the huts, huddling together for warmth, relying on each other to take care of each other's children. So getting along in a group was extremely important. Meanwhile, the men are out there. They're hunting. They're gathering. They're trying to find food and water and everything that their women and their kids need to survive. So they're much more individualistic and concerned about their own personal well-being. It makes sense that you would focus on the woman and the woman's needs and the woman's wants and try to make that the social norm. Yeah, well, if you want to control more people, absolutely. Anyway, any criticism or negative sentiment, if it absolutely must be expressed, needs to be buried in layers of compliments. Of course, yeah, because my fee-fees, yeah. The outcome of a discussion is less important than the fact that the discussion was held and everyone participated in it. The most important sex difference in group dynamics is attitude to conflict. In short, men wage conflict openly while women covertly undermine or ostracize their enemies. Yeah. I mean, women have to express their aggression, their anger, their resentment somehow, and that's how, because those are the tools they have available. Barry Weiss, in her letter of resignation from the New York Times, described how colleagues referred to her in internal Slack messages as a racist, a Nazi, and a bigot. Why? And this is the most feminine part. Colleagues perceived to be friendly with me were badgered by coworkers. Mm-hmm. Weiss once asked a colleague at the Times opinion desk to get coffee with her. This journalist, a biracial woman who wrote frequently about race, refused to meet. This was a failure to meet the standards of basic professionalism. Obviously, it was also very feminine. Okay. Men tend to be better at compartmentalizing than women. And wokeness was in many ways a society-wide failure to compartmentalize. Interesting. Traditionally, an individual doctor might have opinions on the political issues of the day, but he would regard it as his professional duty to keep those opinions out of the examination room. Well, of course. I mean, what the hell does that have to do with treating someone? I may not like somebody, but I have a professional duty as a doctor to do no harm and to use my skills as a physician to help and to heal. And I shouldn't let my political views affect that. Now that medicine has become more feminized, doctors wear pins and lanyards expressing views on controversial issues, from gay rights to Gaza, of course. They view any kind of collective situation where people are coming together in a grouping as a way to affect change, whatever that change might be. And since they're taught that whatever their job is, it's political, and that it's their duty to use their position to affect positive change in the world, and that's exactly what they do. They even bring the credibility of their profession to bear on political fads, as when doctors said Black Lives Matter protests could continue in violation of COVID lockdowns because racism was a public health emergency. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Lawmakers and mayors and governors and all this were shutting down churches, but it was perfectly okay for BLM to go out there and, you know, riot. Oh, excuse me. Protest. Yeah. One book that helped me put the pieces together was Warriors and Worries. The Survival of the Sexes by psychology professor Joyce Benenson. Yeah, psychology. You know what I think of psychology? It's a scam. She theorizes that men develop group dynamics optimized for war, while women develop group dynamics optimized for protecting their offspring. What do you think men were out there doing fighting a war? To protect their offspring? And to acquire resources for feeding and clothing and sheltering said offspring. These habits, formed in the midst of prehistory, explain why experimenters in a modern psychology lab in a study that Benison cites observed that a group of men given a task will jockey for talking time, disagree loudly, and then cheerfully relay a solution to their experimenter. Yeah, okay. Group of women given the same task will politely inquire about one another's personal backgrounds and relationships, yeah, because they have to get along all the time, because they're spending all of their time together. They don't have a choice. The world was a much more hostile place back then. So everybody had to stay together in a group, in the cave, right? In the trees, had to help each other out. You know, it literally took a village back then. So, yeah, getting along was the most important thing, right? Accompanied by much eye contact, smiling, and turn talking, and they paid little attention to the task that the experimenter presented. Eh. Of course. All right. The point of war is to settle disputes between two tribes. Not necessarily. Sometimes it's to get the resources of the other tribe, because there was a time when resources were much more scarce. So if you wanted to survive the winter, you had to go and unalive the other tribe and steal their resources. It was just the reality. But it works only if peace is restored after the dispute is settled. Men therefore develop methods of reconciling with opponents and learning to live in peace with people they were fighting with yesterday. And hence they had to learn and become adept at solving problems. Females, even in primate species, are slower to reconcile than males. That is because women's conflicts were traditionally within the tribe over scarce resources to be resolved not by open conflict, but by covert competition with rivals with no clear terminus. Yeah, rivals meaning other women. But now that same rivalry, that same competitive desire has shifted toward men. Because women are in competition with men now, eh? Yeah. All of these observations matched my observations of wokeness, but soon the happy thrill of discovering a new theory eventually gave way to a sinking feeling. If wokeness really is the result of the great feminization, then the eruption of insanity in 2020 was just a small taste of what the future holds. Yeah, I've been telling you all that. You need to get out. Things are going to get worse. They're not going to get better. Not anytime soon. Not in our lifetime. Not in mine, anyway. It's time to move to another country that values traditional roles more, that isn't as decadent as this one, where resources are still somewhat scarce compared to here, okay? And where women actually need men to survive and will value them. The threat posed by wokeness can be large or small depending on the industry. It's sad that English departments are all feminized now, but most people's daily lives are unaffected by it. Oh, no, their daily lives are affected. They just don't realize it, okay? Other fields matter more. You like STEM. You might not be a journalist, but you live in a country where what gets written in the New York Times determines what is publicly accepted as the truth, which is why women have been pushed into these influential roles, right? If the Times becomes a place where in-group consensus can suppress unpopular facts, yeah, in-group consensus on subjects that has been formed in universities, all right, at a young age, and is now codified in the brains of these front-loaded NPC morons, then they are shaping public thought, public policy, which then goes on to become law. Laws that don't favor men and masculinity, but favor femininity. Oh, more so than Uri does, that affects every citizen. Correct, which is the point. The field that frightens me most is the law. Yeah, as I just said, all of us depend on a functioning legal system, and to be blunt, the rule of law will not survive the legal profession becoming majority female. Yeah, we've already seen what's happened in family courts. We've already seen what's happened with certain darker, skinned people getting no bail, getting let out on bond on, felonies that 20 years ago would have had them behind bars until their trial. They're getting probation. They're getting slaps on the wrist when they should be in prison, insane asylums. And so they're, wreaking havoc and being used essentially to spread chaos and anarchy. Anarcho-tyranny, which I've talked about before, which is where certain groups are went soft on in the criminal justice system so they can go out there and commit more crimes and frighten the hell out of the population, who then will turn to the government to protect them, even though it's the government that is creating the problem to begin with, hence anarcho-tyranny. They are tyrannizing you, gaining more power through their soft-on-crime policies, which then create, well, more crime, which then makes you want more security, and then you turn to the government. But, of course, if you want more security, you have to give the government more power. And if they have more power, then they can become and will become more tyrannical. Anyway, the rule of law is not just about writing rules down. It means following them even when they yield an outcome that tugs at your heartstrings. Yeah, like giving prosecutors too much prosecutorial discretion. They can essentially choose who they do and don't prosecute. That's way too much power to have. Or runs contrary to your gut sense of which party is more sympathetic. Yeah. Well, this is a long article. Oy, oy, oy. A feminized legal system might resemble the Title IX courts for sexual assault on college campuses, thanks to Obama. In 2011, where President Obama, under President Obama, yeah, he's a scumbag, piece of garbage, hate that guy. These proceedings were governed by written rules, and so technically could be said to operate under the rule of law. They did not, at all, but they lacked many of the safeguards that, such as the right to confront your accuser, believe all women, we will remember Mattress Girl, remember her? The right to know what crime you're accused of. And the fundamental concept that guilt should depend on objective circumstances knowable by both parties. And, you know, hey, if you're a private university and you want to play these little games where you do not follow, standard jurisprudence and all that, hey, be my guest. But if you're getting public funds, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Anyway, and the fundamental concept that guilt should depend on objective circumstances knowable by both parties. Yeah? And there should be due process. Again, if you're a private institution, do what you want, but you get public money? Uh-uh. Not in how one party feels about an act in retrospect. Yeah, that was happening a lot. These protections were abolished because the people who made these rules sympathized with the accusers. Yeah. Who were mostly women and not with the accused, who were mostly men. Well, this also gets boiled down to men being seen as disposable, so that doesn't help. These two approaches to the law clash vividly in the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. Yeah, we remember that. That ugly broad said that Kavanaugh graped her. Total nonsense. Yeah. She couldn't remember where the party was, where she was during the party, where he was during the party. Couldn't remember anything. Total nonsense, of course. The masculine position was that if Christine Blasey Ford can't provide any concrete evidence that she and Kavanaugh were ever even in the same room together, her accusations of rape cannot be allowed to ruin his life. Correct. Absolutely correct. The feminine position was that her self-evident emotional response was itself a kind of credibility that the Senate committee must respect. Absolute nonsense, of course. If the legal profession becomes majority female, I expect to see the ethos of Title IX tribunals and the Kavanaugh hearings spread. Judges will bend the rules for favored groups and enforce them rigorously on disfavored groups. They already do that with men. They already do that with men. And blacks and whites. So, I mean, we're already there. As already occurs to a worrying extent. Yeah, it was possible to believe back in 1970 that introducing women into the legal profession in large numbers would only have a minor effect. I never thought that. That belief is no longer sustainable. The changes will be massive. No, they are massive. Whoa. Oh, my God. There's so much more. I'm going to have to do this in, like, two parts or something. Yeah, okay. So I'm going to end it here. That's part one of the great feminization. This article's too long. I want to read it all, but it's just too long to do in one go. So let me know what you think in the comments. Is it a good thing that society is becoming more gynocentric, i.e. feminine? What do you think about that? What do you think of mostly masculine, male-dominated fields being feminized? And what do you think of mostly female, feminine fields? What do you think of women in general themselves being pushed to follow more masculine roles? Let me know what you think in the comment section. This is a big problem. I want to hear from you. Hit that notification bell so you know when I post new content. Like, subscribe to my channel if you like what you hear. And leave a comment. It's good for the algo, I guess. I haven't seen much effect, but who knows? Maybe I will eventually. And on that note, I'm out of here. I am the Realist Philosopher, and I wish you all a good and pleasant day. Take care.